If you can, please, join me in 1 Kings chapter number 15, verse number 27, as we pick up a story about King Baasha of the northern tribes of Israel and the first assassination that takes place in that northern tribal kingdom. The year is 919 BC. Nadab has been on his father's throne, his father being the late King Jeroboam, for part of two Jewish calendar years. And he apparently is a really bad guy, not just simply from a moral perspective of Scripture, because he is a proponent of the golden calf twisted religion that Jeroboam has developed during his kingdom. But he's also just a bad enough guy that his own people hate him. And that becomes clear in verse 27. Baasha, the son of Ahiyah, of the house of Issachar, conspired against Nadab. So here is a man from one of the tribal groups in the northern kingdom of Israel who decides that they can't put up with this guy any longer. He's only been on the throne perhaps less than an entire 12-month period. It's part of 2 years from a Jewish calendar perspective, but not very long at all. And he says, no, he's got to go. And so we are told that Baasha struck him down at Gibeathon, which belonged to the Philistines, for Nadab and all Israel were laying siege to Gibeathon. So when Nadab came to power, he took a bunch of his soldiers, a bunch of his people, down to the southwest corner of his kingdom, where the Philistines have apparently broken away from the Israelis once the Solomonic Empire ended with the split between the northern kingdom and the southern kingdom. Apparently the fringe areas that were non-Israeli began doing their own thing, finding their independence. And so Nadab was figuring, well, I'm going to go down there and make these guys have to stay with me, have to stay and pay me tribute. So he's carrying out this siege against Gibeathon. And so Baasha goes there, and that's where he assassinates him. Verse 28, so Baasha killed him in the third year of Asa, king of Judah, and reigned in his place. So this is the first assassination inside the northern kingdom. It's only we're now at the third king in, and he's a new dynasty. Now, according to the prophecy that had been made, Nadab's body would have been scavenged by the wild birds and the wild animals before it got recovered and taken back and put into his family tomb, because that was the curse that was put on this line. So the Jeroboam line is now done. It's finished. And so now we have a new dynasty, the Baasha dynasty. It doesn't last very long either. Verse number 29, as soon as he was king, he killed all the house of Jeroboam. He left to the house of Jeroboam not one that breathed until he had destroyed it according to the word of he who is that he spoke by his servant Ahiyah the Shilonite. So this Jeroboam dynasty is completely dead-ended. Nobody's left for it. And it's part of the prophecy that God made to Jeroboam through Ahiyah the Shilonite. because of Jeroboam coming up with this new religious twist of the golden calves, because he did not take God up on his offer that if you live according to the covenant, I will make your dynasty endure. Verse 30, the prophet writer tells us this. It was for the sins of Jeroboam that he sinned and that he made Israel to sin, and because of the anger to which he provoked he who is the God of Israel. So that's why he ends up dead. Now, the rest of the acts of Nadab and all that he did, are they not written in the book of the Chronicles of the Kings of Israel? And there was war between Asa and Baasha, king of Israel, all their days. So the border skirmishes continue between northern Israel and southern Judah. At this point, we need to move over to 2 Chronicles chapter 14. Actually, before we do that, let me read the rest of what the first Kings passage says about Baasha as he comes to power. In the third year of Asa, king of Judah, Baasha, the son of Ahiah, began to reign over all Israel at Tirzah. So Tirzah is a little bit north, a little bit east of where Shechem is located. It seems to have become the second capital city of northern Israel. The first one was Shechem, and then Tirzah comes on next. He reigned there 24 years. Now, I told you, his dynasty doesn't last very long, but he does himself personally reign for just over two decades. Now, what's his character? Verse 34, he did what was evil in the sight of he who is and walked in the way of Jeroboam and in his sin, which he made Israel to sin. So again, that's the reference to the golden calf, twisted religion that Jeroboam had adopted for northern Israel, and how they were worshiping God in a very inappropriate fashion with the golden calves. Now let's go to 2 Chronicles 14, verse number 8. And we jump ahead about 10 years, a little bit over 10 years, I believe, since King Asa came to the throne in southern Judah. It's about 906 BC, according to my calculations. It's the 14th year of King Baasha and the 15th year of King Asa. And this is what we read. Verse number, let's see, did I say 8 or 9 here? Yeah, verse number 8. Asa had an army of 300,000 from Judah, armed with large spears, shields and spears, and 280,000 men from Benjamin that carried shields and drew bows. All these were mighty men of valor. Now remember, I told you that when Abiya invaded northern Judah, or northern Israel, he ended up moving the border northward as far as the top, the northern boundary of the tribal region of Benjamin. So it seems as if the entire tribe of Benjamin is now loyal to the southern kingdom of Judah. And so we see a huge component of the army is coming from the tribe of Benjamin now. So the 300,000 from Judah probably includes some from the tribal region of Simeon, and maybe also from some of the northern tribes that have immigrated to the southern area. Verse number 9. Zerah the Ethiopian came out against them with an army of 1,000,000 men and 300 chariots. Now, the Ethiopians at this time are part of the Egyptian sphere of influence. So this guy, Zira, is probably a commander inside of the Egyptian military. And he is given permission or directive to go up against the Judeans. Now, we've seen this happen with a previous pharaoh, Shishonk. Shishonk, I believe, is gone now. But there was a sense back in Shishonk's day that the Judeans were ripe for the pickings because of the collapse of the Solomonic Empire. And so they invaded and they got a lot of gold out of that. So it may be that during this period now, that the Egyptians and the Ethiopians sense, there's trouble going on up there in that region where the Israelis live, with an assassination and fighting amongst themselves. Let's go up there and see what we can take out of it. Well, that's a bad calculation this time around, because it's not going to end the way Shishonk's invasion took place. So they got a million soldiers. They've got 300 chariots. They come as far as Mereshah. Mereshah is about a day's travel south and west from the city of Jerusalem, the capital city of Jerusalem. It was one of the fortified cities. I've been there. It's an interesting place to have been. So that's where Asa goes to meet the invading forces that he hears are coming against him. Verse 10, Asa went out to meet him. They drew up their lines of battle in the valley of Zarethah at Mereshah. And Asa, remember, he doesn't have a million soldiers. He's got 580,000. So he's got almost half the size of military that's invading his country. He doesn't have any of the chariots, apparently. I wonder whether or not Asa is a good enough man that he has abandoned the idea of using horses and chariots like his predecessors did, because the scripture said that the kings of Israel should not have been depending upon those things for power. So he does this instead. Verse 11, Asa cried to he who is his God. So he makes a prayer request. O Lord, there is none like you to help between the mighty and the weak. So help us, O Lord, or O he who is our God, for we rely on you. So this is already starting good as a prayer of a man in power that understands that the only power he truly has as king is depending on the over-king of Israel, that is God himself. So help us, O he who is our God, for we rely on you, and in your name we have come against this multitude. So the reason we're out here is because we trust you. O he who is, you are our God. Let not man prevail against you. So don't let Zira and his Ethiopians win, because they're just here with human power. We're here with your power. And God responds as he said he would for those that would trust him in Israel. Verse 12, so he who is defeated the Ethiopians before Esa and before Judah, and the Ethiopians fled. So they got their clocks cleaned. We don't have any casualty figures, but it was pretty bad on the Ethiopian side. And if there were any on the Israeli side, on the Judean side, they must have been very small. So Asa and his people who were with him pursued them as far as Garar, which is down in the Gaza Strip area. And the Ethiopians fell until none remained alive. I correct myself. We don't have physical numbers as in, you know, 100,000 or whatever. It is that he annihilated the invading force, for they were broken before he who is and his army. And so there's not going to be much power coming out of the Egyptian realm anytime soon. And the men of Judah carried away very much spoil. And they attacked all the cities around Gerar, for the fear of he who is was upon them. Now remember, shortly before this, in our study, the northern tribes of Israel had come down into the Philistine area, the Gaza Strip and a little bit north of the Gaza Strip, because the king of northern Israel felt that the Philistines had rebelled against the Israeli rule. But that fight got interrupted by an assassination. In this case, King Asa of southern Judah, once he completely does away with the Ethiopian invasion force, he pushes against those that have rebelled against Israeli rule and beats them. That is the Philistine territory area. And they plundered the cities. There was a lot of plunder. And then they struck down the tents of those who had livestock. They carried away sheep in abundance and camels. And then they returned to Jerusalem. And more than likely, taking all that stuff was their first bit of tribute from these regions. So we're seeing a little bit more of the dynasty of David asserting their original control over the Philistine coastline. Chapter number 15. Here's the after-action activities. The Spirit of God came upon Azariah, the son of Oded. So we've got a prophet. And he went out to meet Asa. So he leaves Jerusalem proper and goes out to the road to meet the returning victor Asa and his soldiers. And he said to him, "Hear me, Asa, and all Judah and Benjamin. He who is with you while you're with him." So now we understand again the provisionality of the kingdom. God had always said, if you guys will keep my covenant and will honor the things that I tell you to do, then I will protect you, I will be with you, and you will have blessings rather than cursing. And so here is Azariah the prophet reinforcing that. He who is with you while you're with him, if you seek him, he will be found by you. That actually kind of gets referenced in the book of Hebrews, chapter number 11, is that God is a rewarder of those who diligently seek him. That's chapter 11 of Hebrews, verse number 6, I believe it is. But, don't forget the conditionality of this, but if you forsake him, he will forsake you. Now, they've already lived through that period where Solomon rejected God, so God rejects Solomon. Rehoboam shows disloyalty to God, so Rehoboam is not protected by God. Abia starts out at least talking as if he's in support of the true and living God, but his lifestyle shows something different, and so he doesn't get to stay on the throne very, very long. But Asa seems to be, in his heart, seeking God and living for God, and so he gets the benefit of the blessings of the covenant. Now, then we have a little historical reference here to what's preceded Asa's time. For a long time, Israel was without the true God, and without a teaching priest, and without law. But when in their distress they turned to he who is the God of Israel and sought him, he was found by them. Now that may in fact be a throwback clear to the time that they were in Egypt, when they spent 430 years in Egypt and kind of lost connection with their heritage, with their relationship with Abraham and Isaac and Jacob and the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. However, it may be a little closer up to the time of the late years of Solomon, the time of Rehoboam, and the time of Abia. I'm having a hard time in my own looking at this passage as to pinning down exactly when the prophet has in mind here. Verse number 5, in those times there was no peace to him who went out or to him who came in. That's a reference to fighting. For great disturbances afflicted all the inhabitants of the land. They were broken in pieces. Nation was crushed by nation, city by city, for God troubled them with every sort of distress. Again, is that during the time that they were in Egypt before the Exodus, or is it the few years between Solomon going bad and Asa coming to the throne? A little hard to pin it down. Verse 7, but you, take courage. Do not let your hands be weak, for your work shall be rewarded. So Asa is encouraged by the prophet, hang in there, do the right thing, and God will be on your side. Verse number 8, this is something we already saw referenced earlier in this chapter as kind of a getting ahead of the story, little overview of what would happen later in his kingdom. This is where it takes place in the 15th year that Asa was on the throne. As soon as Asa heard these words, the prophecy of Azariah, the son of Oded, he took courage and he put away the detestable idols from all the land of Judah and Benjamin and from the cities that he'd taken in the hill country of Ephraim. And he repaired the altar of He Who Is that was in front of the vestibule, that's the tower, of the house of He Who Is. So Asa now takes this as a signal from God, now clean up your country, clean up your kingdom. And so he goes out and begins to get rid of all of the idols that are anywhere inside of his kingdom that had kind of come into existence during the late years of Solomon and throughout the time of Rehoboam, throughout the very brief time of Ahijah. We also learn that the big, gigantic altar of sacrifice that was in front of the towering front of the shrine building had some problems. It hadn't been taken well care of. And so he gets that repaired. Verse number 9. And then he gathered all Judah and Benjamin and those from Ephraim, Manasseh, and Simeon who are residing with them. So we already knew about Simeon being part of the tribal region of Judah. But we know that people from up north in Ephraim and Manasseh have also immigrated into southern Judah. So he gathered them because, well, what had happened? For great numbers had deserted to him from Israel when they saw that He Who Is his God was with him. So as the people in northern tribal areas see that things are going well down in Judah, even more people immigrate. And so verse number 10, they were gathered at Jerusalem in the third month of the 15th year of the reign of Asa. So we're talking about the spring, the late spring of 906 BC. They sacrificed to He Who Is on that day from the spoil that they had brought 700 oxen and 7,000 sheep. And then they entered into a covenant to seek who is the God of their fathers with all their heart and with all their soul. But that whatever would not seek he who is, but whoever would not seek who is the God of Israel should be put to death, whether young or old, man or woman. So they are going to get strict on this keeping the covenant from here on out in Asa's reign. They swore an oath to he who is with a loud voice, with shouting, with trumpets, with horns. And Judah rejoiced over the oath. All of Judah rejoiced over this oath, for they had sworn with all their heart and had sought him with all their whole desire, and he would be found by them, and he who is gave them rest all around. So this is where the 10 years of peace that we had mentioned at the beginning of the chapter is going to happen, is because God responds to this oath-taking ceremony, this renewal of the covenant, by giving them peace. A little bit more detail on the renewal of the covenant. Even Ma'akah, his mother, so Ma'akah was married to Abiyah. She was the queen mother. She's still alive. Even Ma'akah, his mother, King Asa removed from being queen mother because she had made a detestable image for Asherah. Asa cut down her image, crushed it, and burned it in the brook Kidron. So the queen mother, Abiyah's wife, had engaged in goddess worship and had even made this Asherah pole. And Asa destroys it and actually revokes his mother's status as queen mother to the nation of Judah. That's where we'll start the next time we get into God's Word.